Welcome, everybody, to the Wealth and Prosperity Seminar. It is my pleasure and honor to introduce Randy Gage this evening. So that you all know, I've known Randy close to 20 years. We've been very good friends. And from my years of knowing him, I would say that Randy's greatest gift is how he sees the world. He pretty much will see the brilliance in people before they see it themselves and opportunity in places where most people won't see it. And I think that's why he's become so successful and why he's so cutting edge in his thoughts. And so tonight, I'd love to introduce my friend and mentor, Randy Gage, so that he can help open our minds and expand our world as much as he's expanded his. So, Randy?
All right. Am I coming through live and in color?
Loud and clear.
All right. Thank you, Jeannie. And for you guys who don't know, that was the lovely and talented Jeannie Kidd from Knoxville, Tennessee. Greeting you all tonight, and thanks for that introduction. Thank you guys for being on. I'm going to jump right in this because I have so much I want to go through. Couple of thoughts first. This is going to be the world's first teleseminar Twitter chat mashup, which I've just created on the spot. So that means, if you're not following me on Twitter, by the way, I'm just at @Randy_Gage. And the hashtag to use for this tweet chat and the discussion, so you can kind of connect with the other people who are on the call right now and make comments or anything, is hashtag is RINS. So it's just the # RINS. So you hear something you think is really thought-provoking, hey, tweet it out. Use that hashtag. You find something you think I'm absolutely crazy, I've lost my mind, say so. Use that hashtag. Let's keep the discussion going. And it can continue after, and I'll be watching the screen during this and afterward replying to everything I possibly can. Next thing, in terms of setting up this discussion tonight, I would like to tell you this. This is something I shared on a radio interview this afternoon. I don't even remember what city it was on, but I've been doing so many of these right now. But we were talking about opportunity, and what I told the guy on the radio station is this. I believe for most people, the opportunity of a lifetime comes around about every 3 weeks. And I'm not being glib when I say that. I really believe what most people would perceive as the opportunity of a lifetime, they get something like that every 3 weeks. But why is it an opportunity of a lifetime if it comes every 3 weeks? Because they don't recognize it when they see it. And if you would have come to me 15 years ago with Yahoo, with Microsoft, with Amazon, with Twitter, with anything, I would have told you 100 reasons why it didn't work, couldn't work, wouldn't work, shouldn't work, will never work. I remember Ted Turner making a press announcement that he was going to start a cable news channel, and it was going to do the news every 30 minutes all over again, constantly, 24 hours a day. I heard that, and I said, that's the craziest idea I have ever heard. The news comes out once a night at 10 o'clock. You watch it. It's got weather. It's got sports. It's got the local weather. There's nobody who would ever watch a news channel. He's going to lose his shirt. Not that long after, ABC says they're going to start a sports channel, and they're just going to have sports shows all day, every day, 24 hours a day. Well, I thought this was even crazier than the news channel, because I wasn't really into sports much at that time. And I'm like, you know, they do sports for like 5 minutes on the newscast. Who would watch a whole hour of sports? Fast forward a few decades later, I almost never watch TV. But if I'm watching TV, you know what I'm probably watching? CNN or ESPN. But think about my mindset when I saw them. And like I say, I'm not kidding when I say if you would have brought me Yahoo or Twitter or Facebook or Google or any of these things, I could have given you 100 different reasons why they didn't work, because that was my mindset. And you're going to see, you know, everything we're talking about tonight is based on the book, you know, which isn't out yet. It's called Risky is the New Safe. But this is a book like you've never read before. And in particular, you're going to see a chapter where, and that's why I heard somebody talking on the intro, like, hey, I thought this is Think and Grow Rich 2013. That's what I'm kind of was like the working title for this, because that was actually the working concept for the book, is I wanted to know if Napoleon Hill was going to, if he was alive today, and he was going to write what, you know, what was, you know, if he was going to write that book today with what's going on in the world for 2013, what would he write? And that was my homework assignment I gave myself. And of course, and I talked about this, and I have a video on this, so I'm going to not go into great detail here, but on the riskyisthenewsafe.com, I've got about a 15 or 20 minute video on taking you through the book. And I talk about the process of Napoleon Hill and when he went through and when he was talking to Ford and Firestone and Carnegie and all those guys. And then what I'm looking at is how Mark Cuban thinks. How does Mark Zuckerberg think? How did Steve Jobs think? The new generation of billionaires, Oprah Winfrey, people like this. Here's the thing I can tell you. They think differently. I can tell you this, you know, why would I recognize opportunity now? It's kind of funny. I was thinking about this tonight. I was having dinner down here in South Beach, kind of going through my last-minute notes of what I wanted to cover with you tonight. And I realize I now make more money in a day than I used to make in a year. Literally, I mean, that's the numbers are. I make more money every day than I used to make in a year. Well, what's different? How I think. And that was really the thing I want us to really focus on tonight. Because here's the other really opening caveat I want you guys to understand. If you don't get at least two or three or four multi-million dollar ideas listening to this tonight, you're not paying attention. You're just not paying attention. Because the topics we're going to be talking about are so fascinating. The opportunities that we're going to explore are so vast and are so desperately calling out for entrepreneurs to find solutions for them that fortunes are going to be made. And I mean absolute fortunes. And so I want you to have that mindset. Now, let me tell you the premise that drives the whole book, and it's going to drive the whole discussion of everything we're going to cover tonight. And here's the deal. I've got, 15, 18 different particular areas of opportunity I want to suggest to you. And I'm just going to get through as many as I can. We've got an hour that's, you know, I had the biggest bridge line I could find was 2,000 people. You can only do it for an hour. I couldn't do it for more than an hour. So I'm going to just cover everything that I can get through in that hour. And then I'm going to do another one. And I don't know when I'm going to do another one. I haven't finished packing. I'm on an airplane tomorrow, heading out to an event. I'll be traveling this week, but I'll look for something next week or the week. You know, just whenever I can find an hour, I'm going to get you a notice out. So when you signed up for this, you got onto my Randy's Rants easing list. So you'll know. And just, if I need to do three of these or five of these, as many as I need to do, I just want to get in as much as I can. So that's the point. So now go back to premise of the book, which is the premise of the teleseminar tweet chat tonight. We are entering the period of the most cataclysmic changes in human history. And I'm talking about economically, business-wise, marketing-wise, technology-wise, personal relationship-wise, health-wise, virtually every area of our life. So we're entering this time of some of the most cataclysmic change the world has ever seen, which equals some of the most cataclysmic challenges the world has ever seen, which equals some of the most breathtaking opportunities that the world has ever seen. So that's the premise of everything we're going to discuss together on all of these calls. Keep in mind this. Some of the greatest wealth in human history was created during the Great Depression. And look at every recession that ever happened in the United States, every recession that ever happened in Great Britain, every recession that ever happened in Malaysia or Australia or Germany or anywhere else, and you will find people who created great wealth. Because the greatest time to create wealth is during chaotic times, is during times of uncertainty, during times of challenge. Because that's, here's the example I used to give people when I was doing marketing seminars. Let's suppose you wake up Saturday morning and you got an abscess tooth, got infected overnight. You wake up, your face is swollen out 2 inches, your jaw is throbbing, the pain is behind your eye. You are just desperate to find a dentist who's going to work on the weekend. Right, so you're going to get online, you're going to start searching, you're going to find some dentist who does emergency calls, would meet you there on a Saturday. You aren't looking for discounts. You're not looking for coupons. You're not looking for early bird special. You are looking to make the pain go away. And you will joyfully, lovingly, gratefully crawl naked over broken glass and throw money at anybody who will make your problem go away. So now, if I said you were on your way and I said, listen, I want to talk to you about the children starving in Africa, you'd say, listen, I'm sure I want to help them, I'm sure that, but I just need to make this toothache go away. Talk to me next week, just don't talk to me right now, I just have to make this go away. So this is where opportunity is, during these times of uncertainty, during times of challenge. And the more cataclysmic the challenge is, the greater the opportunity. So here's the other philosophical thing that I think it's important to understand. We assign a subjective value to circumstances and situations. But remember, these are just mind viruses. We make them up. Let me give you an example. It's Wednesday night. You're driving to see Maroon 5 is going to be in concert. You're driving there. You're going along the highway. Boom. You have a blowout and you have a flat tire. That is bad news for you. That's a negative thing in your viewpoint because you're on your way to the concert and now you got a flat tire. Now, for the guy who owns the tire store, that's great news. Because he has a daughter, he needs to send her through college, and he's going to sell an extra tire today. So, same event, right? It's a tire blowing out on a car on the freeway. To you, that's a negative event. To the guy who owned the tire store, it's a positive event. So you have the subjective value of negative. He has the subjective value of positive, but you're just making that up, just like the guy who owns the tire store is making that up. So think of that as we look at all these challenges, because you were going to look at some things and you're going to say, well, I don't like that that happens. Give you an example. The chapter where I'm talking about technology, I'm talking about virtual reality sex. And listen to this. Listen to this statement. The woman who perfects virtual reality sex will become the wealthiest human being in history. Mark my words. And it will be a woman, 99% chance. The woman who perfects virtual reality sex, if she's able to patent the process, will become the wealthiest human being in history. Now, there's people who don't, and I talk about that. I talked about cloning. I talked about cloning sex workers and what's going to happen to that, and then that will destroy. Because, of course, the whole point of all this is when everybody's zigging, you want to be zagging. So when markets go up, there's people who make money. When markets go down, there's people who make money. When commodities become scarce, people make money. When commodities become too overplentiful, there are people who make money going in the other direction. So the same thing. I had Ashra, and you see, I've got a who's who of thought leaders who have really rallied behind the book, and I'm really proud of that list of people who have, you know, supported the book and endorsed it. I have to tell you, I had two people who wouldn't, and they said, "Hey, I love you, love the book, but you know, this thing about virtual reality, sex, and all, you know, I'm sorry, I can't endorse it, you know, because they find that subject uncomfortable." But understand, I'm just the messenger. And when you talk about cloning, when you talk about stem cell research, when you talk about biogenetic engineering, all of these things are going to happen. Well, you may not like them, you may not agree with them, but this is a conversation you have to have. These are things you have to think about because your world is going to be impacted by them. The book actually starts with the story of me in Phuket, Thailand. I go there to ride an elephant. It's one of my bucket list things, to ride an elephant through the rainforest. While I'm there, I see a show where they are training monkeys to replace humans, human laborers, to harvest coconuts out of trees. They train these monkeys, and once they're trained, they can harvest 1,000 coconuts a day. Now, we've been using, you know, mules and cows and horses and, you know, animals as beasts of burden for centuries. But when you start talking about manual labor, then you have to raise the question, do you not think somebody at American Airlines in Dallas, Texas, isn't going to see that and say, could we hire monkeys to replace some of our flight attendants? Do you know, when you look, I flew home from that trip, and I met a couple who had this adorable puppy with them. So I asked to play with the puppy, and the woman tells me it's cloned, which I didn't believe. It's the most adorable, frolicking, sweet puppy you have ever seen, but it really was cloned. It was the first cloned puppy that had ever come back to the United States. Now, we can debate the moral and ethical dilemmas created by cloning for decades, and we probably will. But the fact is, like it, love it, hate it, it's already here. So what is that going to do? So Jones and Son Hardware, you know, why does he need to hire more employees if he can just clone 10 sons? Then we look at, a fascinating thing takes place. I actually had to add in, you know, there was about four things I had to add in, like literally the 11th hour as they were about to go to press, because they're actually printing the book right now. Because of a situation that was happening down in the Florida Keys. There is a British company that wanted to introduce a genetically modified mosquito to help curb some, you know, plant overgrowth of something or some parasite, some something. Well, of course, there's this big drama down there, and people are like, we don't want these Frankenstein mosquitoes. We don't want genetically modified things. Well, think about that. Cloning isn't going away. I mean, that puppy was not the first. They've cloned sheep. They've cloned camels. When will they clone a human? Do you think that's not going to happen? You think that just because some countries are going to pass laws that say you can't clone humans, that's not going to happen? You don't think that some country, some third world country, will say, here's our opportunity. We don't have coal. We don't have oil, we don't have natural resources, but we will create lax regulatory standards, and we will allow scientists to emigrate here and practice human cloning? Do you have any idea what that will do to the economic system? Do you have any idea what that will do to the job market? I can tell you this. There are people who will become trillionaires because of cloning, very likely. So think about that. Let's go back, you know, biogenetic mosquitoes. Okay, so now we're going to talk about biogenetic humans. So my friend Sarah and Tony just had a baby. What would they have paid if when they were at the obstetrician, she said, well, check out the menu board behind me, and here's the menu. Would you like blue eyes, green eyes, or brown eyes? Are you looking for a baseball player, or do you want a symphony composer? And for an extra $1,000, we can guarantee there will be no genetic diseases and no birth defects and no this and no that. What would a parent pay for a guarantee like that? What would me or Bob Berg pay, who I know is listening in because I'm seeing his tweets, what do you think Bob or I would pay if we could make sure that our next son that we were going to have, somebody, you know, was going to be a stud baseball player? Because he's a big baseball fan like I am, I know, right? Think how many guys would be crazy to do that. If Fauzi from Australia, I heard him sign on, you know, what would he be, to have a football player for his son, if he could guarantee a certain skill set. How many mothers would pay extra to get the Maya Angelou poetry gene? Think about the impact of that. It's scary. It's frightening. It's going to be controversial. There's people going to hate it. They're going to say you're messing with God. You're messing with destiny. You're messing with nature. And all of those things are probably true. But it's still not going to go away. Virtual reality. I said in the book, most of you will be able to score the winning goal in the World Cup, or you'll be able to be the keeper and block the winning goal that Lionel Messi shoots in, and you're going to be able to block it and win the World Cup for your country. But you'll be doing it in a virtual reality holosuite. Now, think about that. What would you pay? What would an average person pay with... to have tea with the Dalai Lama, to sing a duet with Elvis, to have a conversation about politics with Abraham Lincoln, to talk story writing with Henry David Thoreau, literature. I mean, think about now, and we're not talking about glasses or a movie. We're talking about you are there, complete 3D virtual reality holodeck, where you hear it, feel it, smell it, taste it, touch it, everything. Imagine what this would be, what it would be worth to you to be the franchisee who had the holosuite for Detroit or Los Angeles or Tokyo or London. Think what it would mean to you if you were the franchisor who was selling the franchisees to people offering that experience. Then, of course, we go to the ultimate, ultimate, ultimate consumer product, the one that will change the world forever, virtual reality sex. And imagine being able to walk into that holosuite and pick your dream partner, whoever you think is the sexiest human being on earth, or create your own and say, I want a 38-inch breast, and I want a 32-inch waist, and I want red hair, and I want green eyes, and I want France Jolie's lips, and I want J-Lo's hips, and I want so-and-so's eyes, and I want this one's ears, and I want this and that. And then picture every sex toy, every sex doll, every gadget, fidget fadget you've ever seen sold in any adult superstore or any adult website. Imagine hooking all of those things up to whatever organ or orifice in your body, having it all controlled in your complete dream state with your complete dream partner, so you feel the sweat really is running down the back of your neck and your spine is tingling and your goosebumps. Bumps are happening, and you're experiencing this orgasm with this perfect partner or partners, whatever floats your boat. Now, you think guys now that, you know, they take their kids' college fund and they run off to Vegas for a weekend and they plunge their lungs out in a casino on a gambling junket? So what do you think is going to happen when virtual reality sex gets perfected? This will be the most earth-shattering threat to relationships, families, marriage, spirituality. I mean, this will rock our culture to the very foundation. The things that because remember what Hill taught in Think and Grow Rich. Sexual energy is the most powerful force that humans have. the whole point of that chapter in his book was how humans channel their sexual energy. And I have a very similar chapter. That's why I say there's a lot of parallels between Hill's book then and my book now. What I'm talking about in this new book, Risky is the New Safe, is I'm talking about how entrepreneurs like Cuban and Zuckerberg and Oprah and Meg Whitman and these super successful people today, how they channel their ego, much as Hill talked about how people channeled sexual energy for sexual transmutation. Well, you know how powerful the sex drive is. I mean, so imagine when that happens. Again, so the threat to families and relationships and all of that. And you know what that means? It means mental health counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, hospitals, social workers. There are people who are going to get wealthy because they will be helping people deal with that. There will be church temples, mosques, and synagogues that will be revitalized because people will need to be, they will have this hunger to get back to their spiritual roots because their whole world has been so threatened by these changes taking place because their family was ripped apart by virtual reality sex. And it doesn't have to be virtual reality sex, by the way. There's a lot of guys who would spend 16 hours a day in a holosuite if it was virtual reality football and they actually could be quarterbacking against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And they would spend 18 hours a day there if they could. You think guys are up till 4 a.m. now playing World of Warcraft and, you know, Angry Birds and, you know, those kind of games? What do you think is going to happen when it's virtual reality and you're not, you know, hold a little joystick looking at a screen, you're in there fighting the Klingons. You're in there chasing the dinosaurs. You're in there, you're with Jean-Luc Picard on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, fighting the Borg. Real, with sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, everything. Imagine what that's going to do. So again, go back to our premise. Cataclysmic change equals cataclysmic challenge equals breathtaking opportunity. This is just, I mean, make sure if you haven't been to the site, it's called riskyisthenewsafe.com. Order your copy of the book so you get the first edition one as soon as it comes off the press. And I've got, again, the video there to kind of take you through the chapters. But, so let's look at some more of this stuff. So, you know, the biogenetic engineering, the cloning. So, again, like I said, the woman who perfects virtual reality sex, she's going to become the wealthiest human being on Earth. But remember, the day that third world country perfects virtual clones sex workers, then the virtual reality might tank. So what went up today is going to go down tomorrow. And you could say, well, I don't believe in that. I don't like prostitution. Prostitution should be legal. It doesn't matter. You don't have to like it. It's going to happen. So how are you going to deal with it? And by the way, Bob says he wants virtual reality baseball, and he wants to play third base. I see on the tweet chat. All right. So now, take this technology thing. Let's look at something else. I'm talking to a client of mine. And he tells me he doesn't get out of bed in the morning until he takes about 20 minutes, picks up his BlackBerry, I think he has, and he checks his email and does his Facebook posts and does all his thing. He does that 20, 30 minutes, then he gets out of bed because, of course, it's been plugged in all night, charging. I think of me, I'm the last person left on Earth who doesn't carry a cell phone. I mean, imagine, just think of the world today. If you would talk to an average person out on the street who was going into the ballet or the opera or the symphony, every one of them is carrying a cell phone. If you would suggest to them that they should leave their cell phone at home to go to the ballet or the opera, they would look at you like you were clubbing baby seals. This is such a threatening question to them. They can't even imagine the possibility. How many people? So the only time I carry one is when I travel. So when I notice that, of course, is when I'm in Asia or when I'm in Australia or when I'm in Russia or somewhere that's really a lot of time zones different than North America, because I'll make the mistake of, you know, I travel 20 hours, so I'll plug it in, and, you know, it'll be 4 in the morning in Kuala Lumpur, and my phone will ring because it's somebody who thinks it's 4 in the afternoon in Miami. This is an issue. We are the most connected generation in the history of humankind, and getting more so every single minute. I mentioned Bob. Bob is actually in a mastermind group I'm in, and Kathy Zader, who's on, I see her in the tweet chat. She's joined us for our dinners, and Lisa Jimenez, Joaquin de Posada, some Terry Brock, and Gina Carr. So we've got this kind of informal session. Patrick Steinis is another one. And we get together for dinners, and we just talk about some things. And so the last one was Joaquin was the host, so he had us at a country club that he's a member of. So I got there a little early. Joaquin is there. He's the first one there. I get there second. We're chatting in the lobby. He is got a laptop on his lap. He has a BlackBerry in one coat pocket and an iPhone in the other coat pocket, because one of them works great in Puerto Rico and one of them doesn't work great in Puerto Rico. So he does a lot of business back and forth. So he carries one BlackBerry, one phone, and he had a laptop to come to dinner with us. And I think he took 7 calls at dinner before Gina told him, if you answer the phone one more time, I'm going to slap you, or something to that effect. Think how connected we are. Think how crazy the idea would be to someone if you would suggest that they would go to church without having their phone with them, that God can't wait, right, that somebody might interrupt when they were communing with God or, you know, whatever. And then say, what's the challenge does that create? What kind of anxiety does it produce? And I don't even have to talk about the brain tumors when the real truth about phone radiation comes out 20 years after the fact. Forget that. You can disagree with me. You can think I'm crazy. Let's forget all that. Just talk about the anxiety of being tethered electronically 24 hours a day. Think about the expectations of employers who expect that since people have cell phones, they should be available at 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. If something important happens at 3 in the morning, well, of course they would answer their cell phone. So what is the anxiety problem? What does that do to your health? What does that do, most importantly, to your mental health? And what will be, you know, what are the challenges created by that? And then what are the opportunities that will be created by that challenge? Because remember, any time there's a problem, there's people who will pay money to make that problem go away. So whether we talk about what happens with cloning, what happens with biogenetic engineering, what happens with technology, there's huge, breathtaking opportunities there. In the book, I've got a chapter on government, and I predict in the book that the euro will collapse within the next 2 years. Now, it's kind of fascinating because I was, you know, testing out material on my blogs and social media, sharing stuff, and it was probably 4 or 5 months ago, 6 months ago, I said the euro is going to collapse. And, you know, people were writing me like, I had lost my mind, and where did I get that from, and, you know, just how crazy I was. Then I have to tell you that I started to get worried that the euro was going to collapse before this book even got out. I mean, now it's looking pretty apparent that, you know, this is just a foregone conclusion to any rational, sane person, in my view. So what's going to happen when the euro collapses? Well, there'll be people who lose fortunes overnight. There will be, that will impact the dollar, the pound, the peso, the euro, every currency on earth. There will be people who lose fortunes overnight. There will be people who make fortunes overnight. What will that do to gold and platinum and silver, any of these kind of precious metals? They will skyrocket in value. You know, when I was recommending gold when it was $100 an ounce, and then at 300. When it was 500 announced, people said I'd lost my mind. 800, they were sell, get your money. When it broke 1,000, that was such a psychological barrier for people. They were just begging me, you know, sell my gold, get out, you know, make my killing. Now we're looking at what, 1,500 an ounce? I'm not selling nothing, because what will happen when the euro collapses? Gold, platinum, silver will skyrocket. It's conceivable. Listen to this now. Pay attention. It's conceivable that gold could go to $8,000 an ounce, $10,000 an ounce, $15,000 an ounce. It's conceivable. Now, I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying it's conceivable. But understand this. When the Google boys start mining asteroids, and they already have a company, by the way, Planetary Resource, Interplanetary Resources, I think it's called, and they're partnered with James Cameron, and they're already setting up to mine asteroids. So when it becomes cheaper to bring gold and platinum and silver back to Earth than it is to take it out of the Earth, then the price of gold and platinum and silver will go down. So what will happen? There will be people who lose fortunes. There will be people who make fortunes. When everybody's zigging, you want to be zagging. And I stand corrected, that was an iPad that Joaquin had. You forgot the hashtag De Posada, okay? All right, so now let's look at some other technology things. Because here's, this goes back to the situation with Joaquin and me and you and everybody in the world today. We have all these screens, right? We have the smartphones, and now we have the tablets, and then we have the laptops, and we have the regular traditional computers. Of course, we have televisions and DVRs and VCRs and all of that kind of stuff. Soon it'll be on a wristwatch. But here's something I want you to think about. The screens, the lines between those screens will disappear. You will create your channel. So your channel, and you would say, okay, I want to get Bob Berg's blog. I want to get Joaquin de Posada's RSS feed. I want to get any new books by Lisa Jimenez. I want to get any YouTube channel from Terry Brock. I want Seth Godin's stuff. I want the American Idol version. I want the X Factor, the U.S. version, the U.K. version, and the Lunar version. I want all the new songs from One Republic and Nickelback and Alanis Morissette. I want all my iTunes stuff. I want my Empire Avenue stock quotes. I want my real stock quotes. I want my updates from CNN. I want my health update, my monitoring from my doctor service, which monitors my blood rate, my breathing, my heartbeat, my everything else, and alerts me to any issues. I want this. You're going to create your channel. You know, here in Miami, we got, I don't know, 100, 200 channels on the cable system. People say, well, you know, how many? Are we going to have 200 channels, 500 channels? No, listen to this. There will be 7 billion channels on Earth. Because every one of those 7 billion people will create their own channel. And they will pick their feed. They will pick all of the things that they want on it. And then it will be on the screen on their wristwatch. When they pick up their smartphone, it'll be on that. When they get in their car, it'll be on the screen in the car. And you can tell me it should be illegal. I know that, and I agree with you, but it's still going to happen. When they walk into their house, it's going to migrate to their 8, 10, 12-foot wide HD TV. When they sit down at their desk, it's going to transfer to the computer monitor, because it's just going to follow them on whatever screen's in front of them. And you know what? That's going to create challenges for manufacturers, which is going to create opportunities for people like Google, because when the Google glasses come out, then you won't matter all the screens, because you're going to have the picture right in front of you in your eyeglasses. And so people are going to lose fortunes while Google makes a fortune, but then, of course, the Google glasses are going to crash when somebody comes up with the contact lens that replaces the glasses. And then, of course, and you know, Jeannie's even texting right now, hey, what about when they just have a computer chip in our head and all you have to do is think about it and it'll come up ahead of you? And people will, and I, you know, I can imagine my friend Stuart Goldsmith in UK, when, you know, other people like me who value privacy, we'd be screaming about that. But if you look at the trend in online, if you look at the trend in technology, people have said with their wallets, they have said, I am willing to give up privacy for convenience. If you can, if I can create an e-wallet where I buy everywhere, I'm okay to do that. If I can join PayPal and do all my transactions, I can do that. If I can do online banking and I can do electronic payments, I'm willing to risk that. I'm willing to give up information, and I know my phone is tracking me and every website I go is tracking me, but you know what? I love the convenience that technology brings me. And so they have already shown with their wallets that they're willing to trade that away. So that kind of chip that Jeannie's talking about in your head, yes, there'll be people against it, but there'll be other people say, hey, sign me up today. So think about this now. All these screens are disappearing. Follows you around. The lines between the screens disappear. Then it comes, whether it's eyeglasses, whether it's contact lens, whether it's a chip in your head. Right? So now where does it go next? Think of the problems that causes for content creators. Because now here's the issue. If you're old like me, you remember there were three networks. There was CBS, this is in the States now I'm talking, CBS, NBC, and ABC. And then you had the public broadcasting one, and then Fox came along. And then, of course, cable came along. So now we had the fight between broadcast networks and cable networks. Then the internet came along. Now we have internet people creating content. So now, if you're a consumer and you want a show, you want a video, you want music, you want a lesson, you want a white paper, you want a seminar, you want whatever information, do you really care if it's broadcast, if it's cable, if it's content, if it's created content online? You don't care about that. So here's what I want you to understand. Fox doesn't get this yet. And Rupert Murdoch, he's a billionaire. CNN doesn't get this yet. And Ted Turner's a billionaire. Mark Cuban hasn't figured this out yet. And he's a billionaire. Nobody has figured this out yet, including the smartest, savviest people in Silicon Valley, in the tech space, in the online space, in the marketing space. Nobody's figured this out yet because it hasn't been figured out yet. But, so you've got Netflix creating their own content. Here was a company, their job was they took movies that the movie studios made and they rented them out to you. And you pay $2 or whatever you pay every time you rented one of their movies. And then, of course, they went online. So now we didn't have to go to the mall and get them. We didn't have to mail them back anymore. Now you get the Netflix app and you just stream it on whatever screen is laying around. So this is much, much bigger than Apple TV. This is bigger than anything you've ever seen, because now if you have Netflix creating their own content, if you have Al Gore starting his own internet TV channel, if you have Mark Cuban, who's doing an amazing thing right now, which is another one of the things I had to add in the late edition of the book, Mark's looking at a new model for the music business, where he's streaming stuff online and then creating physical products from the live broadcast and bringing in the artists and partnering with them. And he might be able to do something with the music business similar to what Steve Jobs did with iTunes. It'll be fascinating to see how that plays out. So the point is, this is really, really evolving, and it's evolving really, really quickly. And I got to tell, like, I'm in discussion right now with a company. Some of you know I'm on a morning television show that's syndicated around the United States here. And, you know, I'm in talks right now with the vice president of that company. We're trying to figure out, hey, where do we go with this? What is the channel we create? Because not only do you have Netflix creating their own content, but you have companies like YouTube. You know, they picked like 100 people and flew them into their headquarters and said, hey, come out here. We want to talk to you. We want to show you how to develop your channel because we need to strengthen our network. So let us give you some assistance. So you have YouTube creating their own stars, right? You have Fox and ABC and CBS and the networks in Australia and the networks in the UK saying, well, can we discover our next star from YouTube, or can we find our next talent online? It's much bigger than all of that, because the lines between broadcast and cable and online created, nobody cares about that. If you create a show and people want it, they don't care if you're a cable network, a broadcast network, or you built it in your basement. And I can turn around right now and look on the floor, which I have all the stuff I'm laying out to pack on my trip tomorrow. I have an HD flip cam there that costs $200. For you guys who watch my YouTube channel, Prosperity TV, that $200 camera is what I film my show with every week. 15 years ago, to do what that camera did, I would have paid $75,000 or $100,000 for that camera. So think of, you know, look at what it takes now. You know, when Cameron made Titanic, and this was one, you know, one of the examples I use in the book, is he spent $100 million. That was the first movie that had ever cost $100 million, and that was scandalous at that time. So when we fast forward to 10 years from now, when he's making the 3D version for $100 billion, right, you know, it'll still have the same ending, and this, you know, people die, the boat sinks, but there'll still be people who go to it, because now you'll feel the water, ice cold freezing water splashing on you. You'll be almost drowning as the water comes up around you as you're in the room with the, you know, Leonardo and Kate and whatever. But you'll also be able to do the video version of that. Instead of $100 million, you might do it for today's equivalent of $5,000. Because the technology becomes so much cheaper. Now, obviously, you're going to get Leonardo and Kate to work for a percentage of the gross, right? But think about this. What it takes to become a broadcast network, what it takes, and this is why I say, if you can't get 3, 4, 5 multi-million dollar ideas out of this summit, you're just not listening. Okay, guys? What it would take, you know, what was the New York Times worth 20 years ago? What's it worth today? You know, what was an online media company worth 10 years ago? What's it worth today? What was Facebook worth, right? How long has Facebook been? You know, they weren't even here 15 years ago, right? What are they worth today? You can say all you want about the stock went down, and I don't care. You know what? Zuckerberg's doing pretty good. You could scrape by on what he's scraping by on right now. So what it would take, though, to create the New York Times today, because the New York Times is built on the old brick-and-mortar model of the newsroom and the editors and all the reporters and the copywriters and the printing press and the plates and all the delivery trucks and the newsstand. But when newspapers become virtual, what does it take to create a media company? What does it take when everything, when nobody cares about content, nobody, instead, so when you catch that commercial on your cell phone for the upcoming new Simon Cowell reality competition, it won't say 8 p.m. on Fox. It'll say, click here to see now. And it won't matter who created it, how they created it, what they created, and they will be able to create it for a fraction of what it would cost a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago. And that's one of those trends where I talk in the book, the difference between cyclical trends and linear trends. That's one of the linear trends. The cost of production for television, radio, video, movies, entertainment conglomerates, publishing, news organizations, the cost of that is going to go down, 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 down in a linear fashion. The demand for that will continue to go up, because one of the other trends you see is that people need to be nurtured 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They got to be busy. If they're at a red light, they are texting. If they're waiting in line at Dunkin' Donuts, they're checking their email. If they're having dinner with their spouse, they're still checking their calls and checking the touchdown updates on their smartphone and whatever. I mean, this whole tethered society, right? There's this voracious demand for information. Now think again, what are the challenges that are that going to create? So here's another multi-million dollar idea for you. How can you help people process the onslaught of information that they're being assaulted with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? You know, think about this. How many blogs do you get feeds on, RSS feeds? How many email newsletters do you subscribe to? How many electronic magazines, how many on the new Apple magazine stand have you, so, you know. And then how many do you read? How much have you just decided that, wow, I love these 17 e-zines that I subscribe to, but I don't have time to read them all. I love Bob Berg's blog, and I love Randy Gage's blog, and I love Seth Godin's blog, and I love Vaynerchuk's blog, and I love this guy's blog, and I love that gal's blog, but I don't have time to read them all every day. You're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're a corporate executive. What is the information you need for your continuing education? How do you keep up with it? How do you process that? If you can help people with that onslaught of information, if you can help them figure out how to process that and make it manageable, those are the people that will crawl naked over broken glass and throw money at you. Why do I predict, you know, I'm predicting some crazy things in here. I said retail is dead, online marketing is going to explode. I believe we're going to enter a golden era of network marketing. Why is that? Because, again, just look at the business models, look at what's happening, and look at where technology is taking us. What you can do with a smartphone today, I mean, it's mind-boggling. But I can actually turn from where I'm doing this. I can look into my beautiful guest bathroom, which I just remodeled. I remodeled two bathrooms in my condo here. And I can look at an $8,000 toilet that I bought, which toilet has a night light, a welcome light. It plays piano music when you walk toward it. The lid goes up automatically. It flushes automatically. When you walk away, the lid closes automatically. So obviously that's invented by a woman. It even has a radio built in, so I can actually transmit AM or FM radio station from the toilet in my bathroom. Now, you know what? That manufacturer doesn't call that a smart toilet, but I would call that a smart toilet. And what about smart washing machines? And smart dryers, and smart refrigerators. So what about when your refrigerator says, well, Mary just took another bottle of Dr. Pepper, she's only got four left, and she always drinks six every week, so we need to add a six-pack to her grocery order to come on Friday. And I can see the carton of milk is down to four-fifths empty. We're going to need a new one of those by Friday. And she's low on eggs, and she needs this, and she needs that. What about the cupboards? And then, you know, who's going to handle the payment for that? Who's going to handle the delivery for that? Who's going to handle the selling that, the store? How does that impact the retail world? How does that impact the supermarket world? So now we got supermarkets, and they build in a bakery, and they build in a deli, and they build in a pharmacy, and, well, do they add a virtual reality holosuite? Do they add kids' play areas? Do they add babysitters? Do they add movie theater? Where does it go? I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. Here's what we know. People who solve these problems will get wealthy. Because when people have challenges, they, you know, go back to the premise, change equals challenge, challenge equals opportunity. So the, you know, look at mobile. Mobile just changes everything. It rips up everything about the internet, everything about website, everything about online marketing. It all changes. mobile is going to be, and I can see, and I'm going to run out of time today, so once again, go to riskyisthenewsafe.com. Watch that video, read through that stuff, and if you didn't order the book yet, order it. Don't lose your mind. Trust me, you got to get this book. It's like no book you have ever read. Next time, whenever I can get this next one, I want to talk about mobile, because you create a website. Let me leave you with this. If you've got a website, you're marketing online, and if you don't have a website, if you're waiting for this internet fad to blow over, I got news for you. It ain't happening. So it doesn't matter if you're a chiropractor, if you're a beauty salon, if you whatever, you need a website today. But mobile is actually making websites almost obsolete. Social media is almost making websites obsolete. Now, companies are grappling right now, if we have this Facebook fan page, do we still need a website? For you guys who have a website, here would be your homework. You call your webmaster, if you don't know how to do it yourself, and go look in your log and find out how many people who visit your site do so from a smartphone or a tablet. And I promise you, that number, that percentage of people, would absolutely astound you. And as soon as you saw that and figured it out, you would drop every single thing you were doing and you would do nothing else until your website was mobile-enabled. That's how cataclysmic a change that is in the online marketing world. I mean, it's just going to be off the chain. Okay, so let me tell you this. Here's the big picture I want you to understand. We live in the greatest time in human history. There has never, never, never been a better time to be alive, a greater time on earth. It's just, there's never been anything like it. With, like I say, with what we can do with technology, with what we can do with social media, with the way the world is so interconnected now. I mean, what it takes to create a tribe, to start a community, to forward a cause, to do your mission, to start a business. It has never been easier to create wealth. It has never been easier to create success. It has never been easier. Listen to me carefully. It has never been easier to go from broke to multimillionaire. It has never been easier to go from destitute to multimillionaire and perhaps even multibillionaire than it is right now today. It is the people, you guys listening to this, and I'm going to post this on the site, so there'll be thousands more of you listening in the weeks ahead. If you're listening to the sound of my voice right now, the vast majority of you will be able in your lifetime to take a vacation on the moon. You'll be able to buy a home on the floor of the ocean with sharks swimming by, with a view, with a coral reef garden in front of your dining room. To be able to score that, goal in the World Cup for your country in a virtual reality holosuite. Now, you need to understand, I'm not talking 30 years, 40 years, 50 years from now. Richard Branson is going to be putting tourists in space next year. There's a hotel right now in the South Pacific that I'm tracking down because I want to do a mastermind retreat there for high level people, and they have a room on the floor of the ocean. And you actually can only go down there for 2 days at a time because it's, you know how the pressure is. If you've ever done scuba diving, you know the issues of pressure as you go deep in the water. So you start with this room on the surface, and then they lower your room to the floor of the ocean, and it's connected with these oxygen tanks. But you can only be in there 2 days at a time, and then they've got to raise it up. But that's open now, guys. So we're not talking 50 years from now. We're talking about things that are going to be happening in the next decade. And the opportunities that they create, mind-blowing. So here it is, the greatest time in human history, and you know what? There are millions and millions and millions of people who don't know it. They think it's the darkest time in human history because they're reading newspapers, because they're watching the nightly news, because they're buying into all of the negative mind viruses that are swirling all over social media, the internet, and their friends and family. They think it's the hardest time to create wealth, the hardest time to become wealthy, the hardest time to be successful, and they don't know it's the best time. That's why I wrote the book. And I'm asking your help. You know, go to that page, make some comments, hit the share buttons, tweet about the book, put it on your Facebook page, tell your friends. If you're in organizations with companies and they need this kind of thinking, get them to buy the book for the people who are the thought leaders, the decision makers. We have to get this message out there because it is the greatest time, but most people don't know it yet. So next time, whenever I can schedule this next one, watch your email. I want to talk about how social media blows up marketing, why retail is dead, a huge, huge trend coming because of all the fake food, fast food, microwave food, stuff like that, and lots of other cataclysmic challenges, changes, which are going to create those cataclysmic challenges, and thus the cataclysmic opportunities because risky is the new safe. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being on. Have a great night, amazing day, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.